interviewing the leading private equity executives and unlocking the secrets of success. Welcome to the Private Equity Podcast with Alex Rawlings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is John Gallagher, CEO of Element SaaS Finance. Welcome, and thank you very much for sharing your insights with us, John.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having us on. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, as is customary, John, if you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm a finance professional, started off life as a chartered accountant. Worked in a family investment office then for nearly a decade across all sorts of industries and different types of investment. Might have been debt, might have been equity, lots of involvement with private equity there. Over the last 4 years, I've been building Element Finance. We spun out of a private equity, venture equity firm in Texas, in San Antonio, Texas, called Skillworks. And Element SaaS Finance is a lender, a debt lender to growing SaaS and recurring revenue businesses.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So unique insight, venture, private equity, running your own firm at the moment. What one mistake would you see private equity firms, portfolio companies, or even venture firms making, and what actions would you suggest to correct them?
Well, private equity mainly try to do is they try to invest and buy companies that they can use their expertise, which might be operational, but a lot of the time it's financial expertise and financial engineering to make the business more efficient. And in doing that, they leverage the company up with some debt, which a lot of the time works very well if it's done right. But what happens a lot of time, sometimes is that whenever they're doing the financial engineering, they go through and they make more efficiencies in the business, and that involves a lot of cost cutting. And what you see sometimes is that the cost cutting goes way too far and starts affecting the product and customers. And in the short term, you know, customers suck it up and stay with the firm. But in the long term, it does damage to the product and the customer base, and customers start leaving. So while in the short term, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, customers stay on board and, you know, profits of the company go up. Over the long term, there's a damage done to the customer base, the reputation, and the internal network of the company. So that's something we've seen a number of times that we're certainly wary of.
Interesting. And what would you suggest is, I mean, obviously there's a goal there from a private equity perspective, but what would you suggest is done differently, other than just the quantity of the opposite of not doing that, I suppose?
Well, you know, look, I think if you focus on your customer, on what your customer needs are and what your product does, that's key for any business. So really focus on if you're cutting those costs that are around that area of your business, be very careful of what you're cutting and engage with the management team who are talking to the customers on a daily basis. Talk to the customers, see what their needs are, and just be careful that you don't cut things that are very sensitive to customers. A lot of the time, there is efficiencies to be gained. Things can be done differently, and you know that's great. But just talk to your customers, take their feedback, and listen.
Always sound advice.
A lot of this stuff is sensible. Don't go too far. If you go too far in any aspect of the business down an alleyway, you know, you can run into trouble. So just take your time, do the sensible things, and you should be okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Software is solving a number of problems across, in essence, every industry. But what made you focus Element SaaS Finance on the SaaS industry?
Well, we spun out of the private equity firm, Scaleworks, that buys and runs software companies. So that's, in our essence, that's our DNA. The great thing about the software industry is your target market is really global. So if a lot of industries, if you're starting in a country or a state, say you're in the US, your target market is the people on the street, the people in your locality. With the SaaS market, everyone in the world is a possible target or a segment. Whatever your business is going at, your customers could be in Australia, they could be in Asia, they could be in the US, they could be in Europe. And that's what you see with most SaaS companies is that they might start in Europe, but they'll have customers in the US that will grow, customers in Asia, and they'll try to expand throughout those. So you become a global company like very, very quickly. The other great thing is that the margins that SaaS companies can make, 70% plus, means that they've got significant cash coming through the business that they can use to grow their business. So, you know, organic growth in the business is a real thing. They don't always need investments. So, you know, you can start up a SaaS company with relatively little capital compared to a hard asset type business. So those are some of the aspects that we love about the SaaS industry and specifically.
Okay, keeping on that SaaS vein, with so many SaaS companies chasing those high valuations, mainly due to recurring revenue models, which any business acquiring a company would like to see, what do you look for to separate, if we use average SaaS companies from the great ones when considering your investments?
So what we're looking for is management team. First off, how do they run their business? How well do they know their business? What's their experience? Like, the management team are in a lot of the SaaS companies we work with are usually the founders of the business. So they're the founders, the owners of the majority stake in the business. So they're living and breathing these businesses. So that's an invaluable item that you can't put a number on, really. And then the way that they're running their business is that they're growing. That might be 30 to 100% growth every year, might be higher, depending on what they're doing. And they've built their company in a very scalable fashion, being efficient with capital, taking on some equity, maybe some debt. To do that, but they're driven by process and by data. So they know that if they can invest more money into their sales team, that what the outcomes are going to be. So that's the capital efficiency of the model is very, very important. The other thing that is super important is back to the customer. That comes out in the revenue and the growth numbers that the company is producing. So you look at the customer numbers, the customer revenue. How much revenue do they lose a month, and how many customers do they lose a month? Is the product sticky? Does Alex keep the product for 4 or 5 years, or does he just keep it for 6 months? If someone only keeps your product for 6 months, you know, it's not solving a need, or you're not doing it right. But if your customers on average are staying 4 or 5 years, it means you're solving a problem for them and they're happy to stick around for the long term. And that's key fundamental in the business. Other things in SaaS, and I suppose it applies to any business, is how much does it cost for you to win that customer? And then what is the lifetime value of that customer? So if you put a euro or a pound or dollar in, how long does it take for you to get that dollar or pound back? Does it take 6 months, a year? And then what is your average lifetime of that customer? If it's 4 years, great. And after year one, you're in profit all the way. Mm-hmm. But if the metrics change, you know, those are the dynamics of the fundamental customer base and model.
Absolutely. So looking into Element SaaS Finance, you've clearly very proud of the growth that you guys have achieved, which I believe is 150% year-over-year growth, which is absolutely phenomenal. How you managed to keep up with systems and processes during that process is beyond me. You know, we've gone through a similar process ourselves, and trying to catch up with things can be certainly difficult.
What would you
suggest to kind of other firms to obviously emulate your success? Clearly not your competitors, but to maybe other private equity, venture, non-SaaS focused businesses?
Well, I think if you talk to any investor, whether they're debt, equity, private equity, venture capital, it's all about building relationships with people, being upfront and straight with people. So, you know, when you start talking to someone, you give them your thoughts, you listen to them, you have an honest conversation, and that'll play out as you build your relationship, because, you know, you're going to stay true to what you're talking about. And so that really helps to build relationships, and building those relationships are key. Like I was talking about customers before, in every industry, people talk. So, you know, someone will say, I've done some business with John in Element, and you should go talk to them. Like, referrals are a very strong part of every business in the ecosystem. So, you know, your good name gets out there. And then, you know, that backs up the marketing and sales efforts that you do. So whenever someone sees your podcast on LinkedIn or Twitter, you know, they go, oh, I've heard of Element before. Let's listen to see what John and Alex are talking about. So they start engaging with you more, and it plays into your marketing strategy then.
Certainly on nurturing relationships, just looking at the infrastructure of a business when you are scaling and growing, especially in venture side of things, that kind of level of fast growth, you've got multiple elements that you're looking to fight, control, get on top of. How have you guys handled that? Because you've got portfolio growth that you've got to manage. They're coming to you, probably asking questions, looking for support, looking for development. You've also got obviously the scale of internally of the firm, of adding headcount and increasing people. You've then got systems, processes that you need to put into your own firm. You know, 150% year over year. I'm sure it can get a bit, you're kind of chasing your tail a little bit. Certainly we have. What have you guys done to kind of help and facilitate that?
Well, as you mentioned, process, once you start scaling your business, process is key. But also the people that are coming into the business, if they're the right people, you have to empower them to do their job. You know, you have to trust them. You have to build that trust between both, on both sides, help them do their job, but also trust that they can go off and deliver results for you. So letting people own their area. Helping them, you know, of course, you're doing weekly or monthly reviews and calls and meetings to make sure that everyone's on board of what's going on. But empowering people to do their jobs and then process, you know, making sure that you have all of those processes every week, every month, every quarter going on so that you're staying top of things.
Okay. And so looking at your website states, not all debt is created equal. What do you mean by this? And what would you advise to companies that are maybe seeking venture debt or even private equity for them to kind of consider?
Yeah, you know, look, there is all sorts of types of debt out there, both in the personal and business market, and venture debt is a subsection of the business market, obviously. So in the venture debt, you have different types of debt. So you might have short-term debt, you know, 6-12 months type debt that should be used for a certain use. Then you'll have R-type debt, which is sort of medium-term, 3 to 5 year debt. And then you'll probably have a longer-term debt partner. So you should use those things for the right uses. So for short-term financing, use that for the ups and downs in your monthly cash flow, but don't use the short-term debt for your long-term financial strategy, because it's just the wrong type of debt to use. And we see people, certainly in the SaaS industry, there's been a lot of that going on in the last couple of years. So we always try to steer people into the right direction for the right use of the debt that they're taking on. Within all of those options of debt, there's different structures of cost structures, structures in terms of security packages, covenants, different stuff like that. So making sure that what you're getting into, that you firstly understand it, and secondly, it gives you enough room to run your business. So let me see if I can give an example of that. So, for example, we do straight interest rates. We're very clear on our website. We say exactly what we do, the terms of our loans. We give parameters. So we're very clear in what we do. A lot of our competitors might do interest rates, and they might be a little bit less than us. But what they do is they take an equity warrant. So they take a little slice of your equity. And that's fine. And that's attractive because you're getting less of an interest rate. But in the long term, that debt provider is going to stick around in your balance sheet until you have an exit. So they might be there for 2-3, they might be there for 10 years. So, you know, just know that if you take on that debt, that person is going to be there with you for the long term and get a slice of the upside. And then the covenants in how you're running the business. If you set the covenants, if you've over leveraged, if interest rates increase, you know, you could run into problems with covenants. So just make sure that the covenants that you're signing up to are ones that are well achievable, because, you know, it might be outside of your control. It might be a general economic thing, and we're going through a lot of that at the moment. But make sure that you have wiggle room to be able to run your business and meet those covenants so that you're not putting yourself under undue pressure.
Makes sense. Lots to consider. And
absolutely. It's minefield.
Debt is created equal. So I appreciate it. I think, yeah, obviously, it's the Private Equity Podcast, and debt is more better understood from the perspective of, but, you know, the general person, obviously debt is regarded as a bad thing, but certainly, you know, there's definitely good and bad debt as is communicated regularly.
Absolutely. And used correctly, it's a great tool. And on a whole, private equity do a good job of that. But you do hear some disaster stories where just, you know, there's been too much leverage and we're the wrong type of leverage. So,
absolutely. If you're ever leveraged, you're certainly in bother, or at least you need to make some changes to correct that.
Sorry to interrupt here. Just a quick note to highlight our new sponsor, Greta. The private equity market is rapidly shifting to a data-driven, proprietary deal sourcing standard. Greta provides the window into over 7 million middle-market private companies. Contact Greta so you can access the market first. Request a demo at www.greta.com. Now back to the podcast.
So you mentioned earlier about, you know, empowering your team and those weekly conversations and discussions with them to monthly, quarterly kind of review type process. But what kind of three attributes do you believe make a top performer job?
The first attribute I would recognize in someone as a top performer is being curious, trying to figure things out to get that extra performance every time and move the needle. And that can be across a spectrum of different things in life. It could be a sports athlete, be a business person, it could be all sorts of things. But people that are curious, they go off and they figure things out, they listen, they read, they solve problems. And it's a great attribute to have. The next attribute would be building relationships. Relationships every day are just key in everything that you do, whether it's your co-workers and colleagues, your boss or the people that work for you, your investors. Building those relationships are fundamental to having a longer-term relationship and a successful one. So being able to build relationships is key. The last one would be communication, being direct, being to the point, being able to explain yourself well, your points of view, and hold a conversation with someone in an intelligent manner. So, but being forthright and straight up with people, I've always found in my career, people really appreciate that. And, you know, instead of circling the topic of conversation, you get stuck in and you get to the nub of whatever the issue is or the deal that you're trying to do, and you're going to solve it quicker. And it helps build that relationship, being direct in that communication. So those are the three things I would focus on.
Sure, certainly can't disagree with them. What do you love? Happy to be included in venture capital here as well, but what do you love about private equity, venture capital industry, and equally, what do you dislike about it?
What I love with the private equity in particular, they take businesses that are maybe inefficient, and they put a lot of efficiencies, operations into them, and they get them performing. So that's really where private equity makes a lot of sense. And has been very, very successful over the last 30 odd years. In venture capital, what I love and venture debt is working with founders of businesses, supporting those founders to help them with the growth and expand their business. They're expanding their own teams. They're expanding their customer base. They're expanding their geographies. And from time to time, they come across things that maybe they don't have expertise in that we can help them out with. So, you know, we have certain expertise that are obviously financial, but also M&A, buying and selling companies, or maybe they're going through a sale process themselves. We can get stuck in and help them out with that and give them some advice. So, you know, it's working with those founders and building those relationships are just, you know, fun. And business should be, there should be some part of business that you're in that you're enjoying it and fun. It can't all be just, you know, hard work and solving problems. So working with those founders is a great thing.
What do you dislike about them both?
What do I dislike about them both? Well, private equity has a bad reputation for the big PE over leveraging, taking all the profits, where employees might get squeezed. So it has a bad reputation for that. That does happen. No one's perfect. But on the whole, when it's done right, it's done well, and everyone should win. You take PE, for example, if the business was to continue being inefficient, those employees might lose their jobs because the business is underperforming. Where if a PE can come in, make it much more efficient, more profitable, well, you know, everyone's, you know, gets to keep their job and progress with the business as the business progress. And similarly, venture capital, you know, we're a debt provider, so we see sometimes that venture capital comes in, gives someone a massive amount of money to go and spend, and they don't really have a good plan for what they're going to spend it on, and they go and spend it on all the wrong things, and it doesn't turn out very pretty after that, because, you know, they haven't grown. The venture capital firm aren't happy. The founder probably won't make as much money, or if any. So that's where venture capital can go wrong. So,
so just on that venture capital side, obviously, when somebody gets a huge amount of capital injection, there is an element of, well, what do we do with this money? You know, obviously, growth is clearly on the table, and there should be a business plan that stipulates where you're going to hire, what you're going to do. What are your recommendations, 2 or 3, with regards to what most SaaS businesses invest capital in? Obviously, it's all going to be unique to every situation and where they go, but where typically does a VC-backed SaaS business typically invest their capital?
VC-backed businesses are usually investing in building out their product to increase their addressable market and then trying to address that market. So getting after the sales and marketing and building out their teams to go after that. Where we've seen it done wrong is that they just start hiring lots of people really fast. They put a pool table or two into it, a gaming system, and the sales team are having championship soccer leagues running every day and stuff like that. And, you know, they're not focused on their job. So, you know, be very wary of how you hire. Be considerate and make sure that there's a plan in place.
Makes sense. So what are your influences, John? What do you read, watch, listen, and what would you recommend others check out?
I love biographies. I love a good story. I love to read about past businesses or sports people who've, you know, maybe they've overcome an adversary, but their journey, their path, how they've got over that difficult quarter they had, or, you know, they had some difficulty in their business or their lives, or, you know, just their path. It mightn't have been a huge difficulty, but seeing how they overcame and succeeded. So, you know, you've lots of different biographies that you go into. I think history, I'm a big lover of history, and, you know, certainly in the tech world, people want to look forward, but in the finance world, turns out we have made the same mistakes a number of times over the last couple of centuries. So I think there's a lot of learnings in history that we should be wary of. You know, we've just gone through a bit of a bubble in tech valuations, and obviously crypto is going through something at the moment. There will be winners out of the crypto space, but like the dot-com crash, there will be a lot of losers. You know, we've been there. We've been here before. It's just a different industry. So I love reading about history and looking back to see what we did and how we righted it and who were the winners. Then there's a lot of podcasts around that, you know, if it's crypto or politics or what's going on in the world and what people are doing.
Absolutely. I think we can definitely look back to see what's coming, certainly from there, as history does absolutely repeat itself. So if anybody wishes to reach out to you, John, and connect post this podcast, how best to do so, please?
Yeah, you can get us at elementfinance.com. We have several pages that you can submit applications or ask us questions. We have lots of resources and calculators on the page to help out founders when they're making decisions, looking at debt products. So, elementfinance.com is the best place to go.
Excellent. Well, John, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your insight. Leave us lots of value, private equity experience, venture debt experience. So thank you very much for sharing everything you have.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
And as always, thank you very much for everybody joining us and listening in today. Should you ever need support with private equity professionals or, of course, portfolio executive hiring across Europe and North America, please do reach out to me at Raw Selection. If you haven't done so, please do subscribe, and you'll be notified of the next podcast in 2 weeks. Until the next time, keep smashing it, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Private Equity Podcast on www.raw-selection.com.